With this reservation in mind, I hurried to the galley in hopes of finding Zachariah. I would ask him to fetch the needle. The galley, however, was deserted. Since I did not wish to disappoint Ewing, I decided I must go and fetch the needle myself. Timidly, I approached the forecastle door. As I did, I heard muted voices from within. Indeed, it was only because they were vague and indistinct that I found myself straining to listen. And what I heard was this.
"I say I'll be the one to give the word, and none other. It had better be soon. Jaggery's pushing us hard. How many names do we have? There's 7 that's put down their mark, but there's others inclined.
What about Johnson?
It doesn't look right. He's not got the spirit.
It won't do. He needs to be with us or not. No halfway. And I don't like that girl always spying.
Her being here isn't anyone's fault. We tried. You remind yourself we kept those other passengers off."
I heard these words, spoken by at least 4 voices, but I did not at the moment fully grasp their meaning. Understanding would come later. Instead, I was caught up in embarrassment that I should be eavesdropping where I hardly belonged. It was not a very ladylike thing to do. Yet I was, in part, the subject of their conversation. And the errand was still to be done. Wanting to do what I'd promised, I knocked upon the door. Sudden silence. Then,
"Who's there?"
"Miss Doyle, please." Another pause.
"What do you want?"
came a demand. "It's for Mr. Ewing," I returned. "He sent me for a needle." There was some muttering, swearing. Then,
"All right, a moment."
I heard rustling, the sound of people moving. Then the door was pushed open. Fisk looked out. He was a very large man, lantern-jawed, his fists clenched more often than not, as though perpetually prepared to brawl.
"What do you say?" he demanded.
"Mr. Ewing wants a needle from his chest," I said meekly. He glowered.
"Come along, then,"
he said, waving me in. I stepped forward and looked about. The only light came from the open door, just enough for me to see that the low ceiling was festooned with dirty garments. I was accosted by a heavy stench of sweat and filth. Scraps of cheap pictures, some of a scandalous nature, were nailed here and there to the walls in aimless fashion. Cups, shoes, belaying pins, all lay jumbled in heaps. In the center of the floor was a trunk on which sat a crude checkerboard, itself partly covered with a sheet of paper. Along the walls hammocks were slung, but so low I could not see the faces of those in them. What I did see were the arms and legs of 3 men. They seemed to be asleep, though I knew that could not be true. I had heard more than one voice.
"Mr. Ewing's chest is there," Fisk said, gesturing to a corner with a thumb.
He lumbered back to his hammock, sat in it, and, though he said no more, watched me suspiciously. The small wooden chest was tucked under one of the empty hammocks. Apprehensively, I knelt, briefly turning to Fisk to make sure that this chest was indeed Ewing's. He grunted an affirmation. Then I turned back, drew the small trunk forward, and flipped open the top. The first thing that met my eyes was a pistol.